All right. Halftime is over. 2 hours down, 2 hours to go. And what better way to kick off the third quarter of Robbie and Rex Road than to talk some football, some Titans football with minicamp starting, the mandatory stuff with Teresa Walker from the Associated Press, a Nashville media mainstay. Teresa, appreciate you joining us this morning.
Well, good morning. How are we doing besides sweating already?
I'm miserably hot in this studio. I will sweat. It doesn't take much for me to like get overly warm and like uncomfortably warm. So this week is going to be a nightmare for me. So I'm already embracing it that I'm going to have to go through like 3 shirts today. So other than that, we're doing good. We're surviving. I'm just trying to stay hydrated.
Hydrate. I've got 2 containers of liquid with me to try and stay hydrated today at the Titans minicamp.
See, that's how you know you're a pro, is you've planned for the hydration part, and it's smart. And when you're going to be at minicamp, you're going to see Derrick Henry and Jeffrey Simmons, and those were the 2 names that we thought might not be in the building because of some contractual issues or maybe wanting new contracts. Especially for me, Jeffrey Simmons was the bigger question, but seeing Teron's tweets yesterday where he said he confirmed they are both in the building, how significant do you find that for the Titans here going into practices today?
Well, significant, but here's the thing. I wasn't among the camp that thought that they wouldn't be here. I mean, you know, Derrick Henry, when he was franchise tagged and, you know, his contract could have been an issue the year before, never was an issue. And he told us that repeatedly, not just with his words, but by the fact that he always showed up. Now, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, he's a different situation. You know, he did receive 10 votes toward being an All-Pro this last season. He had a heck of a season, career year, but he still has 2 more years left on his deal. That said, got to think he's going to be up soon for the Titans on their to-do list of trying to get an extension done. But you know what? I got to think that communication is going to be involved there, and you know, a deal would get done at some point. Maybe not when Jeffrey Simmons exactly wants it, but I got a feeling that based on past history that they're talking, and, you know, we'll just have to wait and see on there. But, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, from what he's, you know, he was at the Von Miller pass rushing camp, and, you know, if he can take another step in his game, he is this close to being, you know, in Aaron Donald territory, but you got to be around to do that, and, you know, being on the field is the fastest way for him to get that kind of contract and put himself into that conversation in the entire NFL.
What would you do if you were the Titans on Simmons, Teresa? Because, I mean, I, obviously, like, in a perfect world, I guess if I'm the Titans, I'm like, yeah, it sounds great to have Jeffrey Simmons for $4 million this year. I love that. But it is, you know, obviously, if, you know, you understand his side, at least that I know how I'd be feeling if I were him. With a huge deal that would be warranted right now, you know, but still, you know, 2 years left. I mean, because they have the option year after this. So, what do you think? What do you think the Titans should and will do in approach this?
Well, that's the challenge. In a perfect world, you give him his extension, you pay him a lot of money, and you make him happy because you can. But they don't live in that world. They live in a world where they still have a salary cap where Ryan Tannehill is taking up a massive portion of that this year, right? So, you know, maybe you can talk to him and say, listen, we get to next year, let us, you know, get to that 5th year and we'll see about redoing that deal. Because guess what? They've got him, okay? It's fully guaranteed. Unlike a couple years ago when they released Adoree Jackson a year ago in March, they had picked up his 5th year option too. Well, it's fully guaranteed. So, you know, he's getting that money next year for sure, and at that point, it feels like that's when financially it's going to be better for the Titans to try to redo that deal and rework it to give him his pay, give him a big bump, lots of guaranteed money, and make him happy. But, you know, let's face it, this year, Ben Marino is a mathematical whiz with the salary cap for the Titans. I just don't see how you can really do that this year. But then again, I'm a journalist because I didn't want to take math in college. So, you know, they may find a way to redo that, but it just feels like next year is going to be the better time to try to do an extension for Jeffrey Simmons.
Same, yeah. I went to journalism school to avoid doing as much math as possible. Talking to Teresa Walker from the AP, that is Associated Press, not Adrian Peterson. And Teresa, one thing we were going to address later on the show are position groups of intrigue for this Titans team. And with the mandatory stuff ramping up right now, and we're really steamrolling towards training camp, what are some position groups that you've kind of been keeping your eye on, or that you're going to be looking for today, that might be a make or break group for this Titans team this year?
Well, my eyes have been on the receiving group of the tight ends much of the last three OTAs, right? Because there's been so much change in those two position groups. It's tough with Caleb Farley and Christian Fulton having been in yellow non-contact jerseys. I mean, next on my list is offensive line, but guys, until they start putting pads on in camp, it's really tough to gauge that group. And then the secondary cornerbacks, we're going to be watching them. Why? Well, they're so young. And yes, they have Bryce McCain. They have Buster Skrine back there for a couple of veterans, but they're leaning on, three, four very young cornerbacks from Christian Fulton, Farley, Roger McCreary, Elijah Molden, and, just waiting to see how they kind of shuffle out and can this group get up to speed as quickly as possible. But, this is the time of the year where, just because of the limitations of what they're doing, I'll be watching receivers and tight ends, and keeping an eye on the offensive line to see how they're trying to shuffle guys around and who's working where. But, for me, those are going to be the four areas that, we watch, not just through mini camp, training camp, but throughout the season, because they're going to determine just how much we do this season and with the Titans. And sorry about that. My husband should know when I'm on air, right?
Oh, I love the ringtone there. That's good.
Well, it's
reality radio. I love it.
Reality for sure. I just have to, this is a problem. I just don't communicate with him enough when I'm going to be talking on the air so that he can, remember not to call me.
That's good. Oh, Teresa Walker from the AP. Oh, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So I did want to get you were in the press box Friday, Teresa, in Knoxville. You're all over the place, all over this state. Did want to get your postscript on the Vols' massive disappointment.
Well, sometimes it happens. I mean, I never played college baseball, but I played 15 to 20 years of softball, and you just get a feeling. I mean, that Friday night, every ball that the Vols were hitting the ball well, but they were hitting them right at an Irish defender, right? Whether it's ground balls, fly balls. And, they kind of busted out the bats on Saturday and just had the offensive explosion that we've seen from them all season long. But, on Sunday, when they stranded two, they had two on and they made a pitching change and, there weren't any outs, and the Irish got out of that inning without giving up a run. That's when I knew that there was going to be a chance that they would lose. And, guys, I still remember in 1989 when Don Zimmer left pitchers in a batter too long against the San Francisco Giants. And, you wonder if Frank Anderson had not been suspended, maybe he tells Patello to pull Chase Burns before he gives up the first homer in that inning rather than, just let him get tagged and start, the offensive explosion by the Irish, a team, guys, that were like 70, I think they were 68th or 78th in the nation in home runs, and yet they found a way in that ballpark to launch, that they had four on Friday night matching their season high, and then, they were showing that they could hit the long ball too on Sunday. So if Anderson was there, he tells Vitello, was like, let's get this guy out of here. Yes, he's looking good, but let's pull him. He was suspended because of, what happened on Friday night. And they end up giving up way too many runs there. And Chase Burns, this is where coaches need to protect a freshman. He was looking good. He was cruising along until he wasn't. And that's where a coach has to have a feel for his pitchers and know when to make those moves. It's a learning experience. Very painful for Tennessee Vol baseball fans, but, it's the kind of thing that, Tony Vitello, Frank Anderson, and the rest of that team will get better and smarter for having been through this heartache.
That's just a great reference to 1989 and Don Zimmer. But, I love that team. But, no one was getting Will Clark out in that series. What did he bat, like 600 or something?
Yeah, and the fun thing is Mark Grace was just under that.
Yeah.
But because Will Clark was just otherworldly, nobody noticed. And, yeah, trust me, I can rationalize that as a Cubs fan. The reason the Cubs lost that series was so that all the Giants fans would not be on the road coming home from work. Instead, they were getting in front of their TVs or at the ballpark getting ready for first pitch of Game 1 of World Series when the earthquake hit. So, you know, that God was just saving some lives there. I'm just saying.
I like it.
Teresa Walker from the AP. Real quick, Teresa, you saw this Warriors team play the Grizzlies in person when you covered them for the AP. So they won Game 5 last night. Do they finish it up on the road in Game 6?
I'd like to think so, but you know the Celtics have found ways to bounce back and get off of the mat. So I won't be surprised if there's a seventh game forced. But guys, when the Warriors beat the Grizzlies, I just had the sense this team was going to go on and win the NBA title. They want this title. They want to be a team that wins a finals title in another decade to kind of help cement how good this program has been with Steph and Klay. And, they're just too experienced, and they've got some young guys who are really coming through for them to help them out, like Andrew Wiggins last night, Kevon Looney, and, Jordan Poole has had his moment. So it just feels like they're going to close it out. I won't be surprised if there's a Game 7.
All right, Teresa Walker, the best. Teresa, thank you for joining us today. And hydrate, stay cool out there at Titans practice today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
As always.
See you soon in the absolute frying pan today.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute scorcher. Not looking forward to that. But we'll discuss what Teresa says on the other side, react to some of that, talk Titans practice as well as you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game Nashville app.
Well, attention men, have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Well, Hillside Medical Clinic has a breakthrough treatment for ED that does not require any pills, injections, or surgery. And right now, Andrew joins me from Hillside Medical Clinic to tell us all about it. Andrew, what's going on?
Well, that's right, guys. If you're struggling with ED, you're probably sick of those pills. I don't blame you. Hillside Medical Clinic uses the most advanced form of a technology. It's called wave therapy. Gentle pressure waves go through the skin into the blood vessels. It only requires a few 10-minute treatments, and it's clinically proven to get rid of the erectile dysfunction without the use of pills.
So, Andrew, what kinds of studies have been done on this wave therapy technology?
Well, it is extensive. 60 clinical studies. Think of that, from 5 countries all over the world. This is heavily vetted. Even Cambridge University studied this, and it was called the new standard of care for erectile dysfunction.
And, Andrew, you've got a special offer if our listeners call in right now.
We certainly do. Guys, if you're ready to end the ED and regain your love life, grab your phone, give us a call. The assessment, exam, and blood flow ultrasound is going to be free this morning. And this very popular gift that produces immediate results in the bedroom, you'll love that. It's worth hundreds of dollars. Call us now. It's all no charge.
You heard it, guys. You can put a stop to your erectile dysfunction by treating the root cause of the problem. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now to qualify for that offer at 615-576-5000. That's 615-576-5000. Put a stop to your ED and regain your love life. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now at 615-576-5000.
.1025 and .1063 The Game, .1029 The Buzz, and the Nashville Predators are hosting a 615 day celebration at Ford Ice Center Antioch tomorrow, starting at 10 a.m., with proceeds benefiting the Boys and Girls Clubs of Middle Tennessee. This event will feature fun for the whole family with games, giveaways, food, and ice skating opportunities. Also, right now, bid on silent auction items, which include Preds autographed merch and more, and donations are being accepted for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Middle Tennessee. Just visit thegamenashville.com/615day. Joe, are you going to be making an appearance at 615 day, and can we expect you in ice skates?
I've never ice skated.
Never?
I never will.
From Michigan, you've never ice skated once, not even to like mess around and try it?
Yeah, it's a fair question, but I'm playing hoops in the winter, man. You know, so I moved out of Michigan after fourth grade. So, Yeah, just never did it. I did rollerblade, which I guess is similar.
So know, much better. Because rollerblading
was, you know, that was cool in the 90s, you know. But, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. But apparently I'm going to be in the dunk tank tomorrow. So
even better. You know,
I think my daughter's already excited about trying to dunk me. And she's like, I'm just going to go push the button. I'm like, no, you will not just go push the button. If you earn it.
There are rules here.
Yeah. If you earn it, then you can dunk me. But other than that, no.
There's dunk tank etiquette.
So I think Jared and I both at different times of the day will be in the dunk tank. So if anybody would like to.
I'm doing it, you know, too.
You're doing it too?
Yeah.
Nice. Let's go. Let's go. What time is it? Because I want to make sure. I want to take a few shots when you're in there.
Oh, I thought you meant like alcoholic shots. It's like, okay, Joe.
Really
not necessarily opposed to that. But.
I don't know the exact time, but I know I volunteered that I would do it as well. And your daughter, Caroline, and I will for sure push the button on you, Joe.
Well, then I'm not getting in there. I mean, if I don't have assurances that this is going to be earned, you know, then I that's no way, man. So if you're a Vanderbilt fan,
I was just about
angry,
to say,
yep. You know, want, you're sick of just tweeting at me or putting comments on my column, come on out.
If you heard the Rex rant and you're tired of Joe's mess right now, then we have the event for you. That is tomorrow at 615 Day, the Ford Ice Center in Antioch. You will have your chance to dunk Joe Rexrode, a golden opportunity. But, Joe, we had Teresa on, and Titans are practicing today. And the one answer that I found really intriguing, because I asked her about, you know, position groups that are going to be of interest that we're going to be keeping our eyes on here today and leading up in the training camp and preseason too. It's, to me, like, it was clearly for me, the wide receiver group is in a class of its own. But the secondary on defense is one that obviously there are some question marks in terms of veteran status. They're very young. I think the ability is there for them, but the question marks are going to be availability and experience together, because I think the talent's certainly there, and I think they've at least invested in the secondary enough to where they might be able to rely on them a little easier than we thought going into the season. But the inexperience might be a little more of a factor than I took into account before we spoke to Teresa.
Well, it's going to be interesting. There's that one spot to me. Like, I think Molden, I'll be surprised if Molden doesn't really look like a guy who, like, you see a lot, I think, in the NFL, but you see in other pro leagues too, you know, that second year jump after your first, like Tomasino for the Preds next year. I'm not saying I expect him to all of a sudden come out and be a 30 goal guy or anything like that, but I bet you he looks different in a good way after a good rookie season, taking some lumps, learning along the way. Like, you know, that second year jump, I think from guys, especially guys who have the right approach, athletes who have the right approach, you see that. I think we're going to see that from Molden. We saw it from Fulton last year. Will we see it from Farley? I mean, that's and obviously it's just a totally different situation, because the bigger question is, will Farley be all good, all healthy, and prepare to go through a full season and stay healthy? I mean, he said last week the back is basically a non-factor, but does that mean it's never a factor again? I mean, you know, the history of back injuries would suggest that, you know, you shouldn't just close the door on that possibility. But if the ACL thing's coming along well and he's ready to go, that would – I mean, if he can make a big – again, you're talking about a big jump from – not playing much and then having a season-ending injury after playing very little corner in the previous years and having multiple back surgeries, et cetera, et cetera. But if he's a guy that can kind of next year, and then McCreary comes in and is good and is at least a good number four corner, then, I mean, their defense on paper looks like there's no glaring weakness.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Farley, too. That's going to be the main person to, like, to watch for me, just because not just, like, the injuries are one thing, right? Like, he says the back's a non-factor, and I will believe it until, you know, something else happens. And, like Tim Hasselbeck said on Darren Donick and Chase not too long ago, like, or when the Titans drafted Caleb Farley, who was asked about that injury. He's like, well, you know, no one's ever said I used to have a bad back. Like, those are some of those things that don't necessarily just go away with time, you know. And then the knee as well. The knee I'm not as worried about, but I think I would be more concerned if I'm a Titans fan, just like the fact that he's played such little corner since 2020. You know, he has at Virginia Tech, he only played 23 games, 10 in the final year, didn't play in 2020, and then obviously didn't get on the field much last year before getting injured in the Buffalo game and missing the rest of the season. Like, that's a lot to go through. I mean, they're like, even some of your best athletes in the world, like Klay Thompson, for example. It's a recent right now because in the NBA Finals, we're talking about torn ACL, torn Achilles, about two of some of the worst injuries you could have. And he didn't play a game for over 900 plus days. And I think it took him a while to be able to just get acclimated, not just to be back in game shape, but to be back to what he was. And he still even isn't where he was. And he's one of the better athletes in a sport that has the best athletes in the world. The NFL is obviously the same way. But my thing is, when you've missed so much football, it's not going to be just plug and play. Like, I think it's going to be about November, December until you get the best of Caleb Farley. Like, I expect a really slow, like, ramp up period for him.
That's probably fair. I mean, that's probably more realistic. You know, when it comes to timeline with ACL and the position he plays and everything, mm-hmm. he could be ready to go, but there's so many different things combining together. So if you're right, you know, then where do the Titans go over there? Like you said, you know, Screen was a good pickup last year. They picked up a ton of guys last year and all over the field. I think Screen was one of the really good finds, mm-hmm. and gave them some really important performances late in the year. Chris Jackson has exceeded his draft spot already. He's a guy they can count on, rely on. You know, there are limitations there too, but those aren't like terrible options. But McCreary could be an upgrade, and that would be very beneficial for them. If that's true, if that's how it goes with Farley, and it's going to take a while, then McCreary having a really good rookie season would be huge. And look, they just haven't had in recent drafts, they haven't had a lot of rookie contribution of significance. Mm-hmm. They've had some, but you know, even like Fulton was very limited last year, second year, big time jump.
Yeah.
They could really use, obviously the first round pick. Yeah, that's you know, all eyes on Treylon Burks this week, and every day of camp and every game, but McCreary would be a really nice, and then we'll see with Petit Frere too. Obviously, I mean, it's possible that he could be a big factor on this team as a rookie.
Yeah, and I think that's McCreary question is going to be big too, because I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. Like, obviously there's a lot on Treylon Burks, and that's going to be the more national news story, but there's going to be some on McCreary as well. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. Text or call us 615-737-1025 or phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Which position groups are you looking at in Titans minicamp and leading up into training camp? Which ones do you have your eye on, or which ones do you have concerns about if you're a Titans fan? I'm Elijah Campbell filling in for Robbie Stanley. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Talked about the NBA Finals a lot early in the show, and just remember, you can catch the NBA Finals on these here airwaves, 102.5 and 106.3 The Game, as the Golden State Warriors take on the Boston Celtics. Tip off for Game 6 is going to be Thursday night at 8 p.m. Our NBA Finals coverage, of course, is powered by FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Robbie and Rex Road here, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, talking Titans minicamp, taking your calls and texts. A lot of interesting stuff here going into camp, Joe. And, of course, that we talked a lot about the Titans secondary. And obviously taking your calls on all offense, defense. And Dennis has a question on expectations for another Titans second-year player. Joe, I know you were talking a lot about the players looking to make that jump from rookie year to year two. Dennis on our text line, driven by WilsonCunningham.com, says, what are your expectations for Weaver this season? So he's talking about Rashad Weaver, the second-year defensive lineman from defensive end from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, definitely someone people shouldn't forget about. I'm very interested to see what he does this year. I watched him a lot in college, and he was a tremendous player. And I thought you saw early, you know, like in the first preseason game. Yeah, it's a preseason game, but he was blowing people up. He's a guy with the potential to be a very good player. I don't know what expectations are, because there's still the question of, I mean, if Dupree and Landry are healthy all year and really good, what are the opportunities? Maybe I could see Weaver being in some kind of a sub package, certainly providing depth. Ola Dainey also is a guy who got some stuff done as a pass rusher last year, obviously is a big role in the kicking game. You know, those guys, I guess I kind of look at it like those guys are competing to be like the third, you know, outside linebacker. And I think both will have some kind of a role. But I wouldn't be surprised if Rashad Weaver really flashes at times this year and helps his defense. I think that's exactly what you want to have happen. You know, if you're an NFL franchise, NFL coach, GM, like you, the Rashad Weavers become bigger factors. The Monty Rices eventually grow into bigger roles. Amani Hooker, fourth round pick from a few years ago, kind of, you know, special teams guy, learning on the bench. Boom, now you're ready to move on from Vaccaro. He steps in. He's a really good starter. Like at some point in the next few years, I would not rule out the possibility that Rashad Weaver takes over for one of these much higher paid outside linebackers and, you know, and takes that job. Now, is he good enough to be a starting quality, major producing outside linebacker in the NFL? I think we're still a long way from finding that out, but I wouldn't sleep on him. He's a very talented and powerful guy.
And the Titans definitely like him too. I mean, we heard a lot of things about how much they liked him in camp. And then, like you mentioned, that Atlanta Falcons preseason game, he was all over the field and he was able to swarm the backfield for the Falcons in that game. But I just think there's such a logjam right now that, you know, Dennis, if you're asking for my expectations this year, it's not much. I mean, he'll be very much so a situational type player. I think it's going to be another developmental year for him, that they're going to take him, move him along pretty slowly, just because there's not a lot of pressure for him to have to be able to produce right now. Because if there is a strength of this entire Titans team, it is that defensive front, right? Like there, you don't have to, you're not going to rely on Rashad Weaver to get you, you know, even 8 or 9 sacks this season, just because you're going to have Bud Dupree healthy for a full season. Harold Landry's back. You've locked him up long-term. That I think you're going to be set on that part. I'm more intrigued to see about Monty Rice and feeling and see what kind of progression he takes as well, just because I think he might not be as secure as Weaver. I just know the Titans really love Weaver, and I think there's a whole lot of upside with Weaver. I think they at least know what they have with him for now. And they, like you said, Joe, they might even be like preparing him to take over for one of the higher end guys. But I think there's definitely a role for Monty Rice to be able to make a good contribution this season, because there's, I guess, some positional differences.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I think certainly, you know, you're going to go with Cunningham and Long, you know, as long as those two guys are play the way you expect them to play. And again, as long as they're both available. But realistically, Monty Rice is going to be forced into some situations just because no one stays, you know, no defense stays totally healthy or position group or whatever. And it's just, I don't have a great, you know, I don't have a great feel for like what Monty Rice's upside is, but I remember David Long. Now, granted, Monty Rice is a higher pick than David Long, but I remember David Long as a rookie. He's a 6th-round pick out of West Virginia. You know, guy, okay, good for him. Made the team, special teams guy. By the end of that rookie year, Jayon Brown's hurt, and you've got to play the number one seed, 14-2 Baltimore Ravens on primetime in their stadium and deal with Lamar Jackson, and you're dealing with a totally different offense than you normally face any other week of an NFL season. And David Long, you know, that assignment football that you have to play against them was great. And then you're like, oh, okay, this guy, could be something. It still takes some time to get him to where he is now. Monty Rice, last year, there were some injuries. He was in a little bit. Hard to tell. But, yeah, I think we're definitely going to learn about him and whether he is going to be one of those guys who, in a couple of years, is ready to, take over for a Zach Cunningham, for example. I mean, that's the circle of life in the NFL. Just think about a year or two down the road for all your guys who are making big money, who have big contracts or guaranteed money's out of the way. That's where you make moves if you have young players who are developing.
I think the David Long thing too, I remember when they drafted him and just thinking, wow, the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year doesn't go in the draft until the sixth round. They might have a steal in a league in a conference where they air the ball out all over the place. And it took him a little while, I guess, to get to that spot. But there was definitely one skill set that he had that is really valuable in today's NFL that once he finally mastered, was able to get himself on the field and make a big impact. He's fantastic in coverage. David Long, honestly where his main value is. When I watch him play, that he is fantastic in coverage and can match up with a lot of different players. I think Monty Rice has to be able to at least find that one thing to be able to get him on the field, whether it is coverage, whether it is great in blitzes. That's the one thing that I think, and there's going to be an opportunity for him to be able to do that this season. I think the main question is just where does he fit in all of that? Because like you said, this team especially is no stranger to injuries, offense and defensive side of the ball. I mean, they played a record amount of players and started a record amount of players last season because of that. And that's where I think you're going to be able to see a lot of him. In terms of players making a year one to year two jump, I think the Monty Rice question might be a little more significant than I previously thought going into this offseason.
Well, it's interesting you said about David Long, because I would say that early on, that was very much a weakness of his. I mean, that speaks to what he's done to do work. And really, I think the last two off seasons, at different times, I talked to him about trying to figure out coverage skills. And he, before the preseason games last year, was talking about all the stuff he was doing, working with cornerbacks and stuff like that on hip turns. And all of a sudden, I think it was the first preseason game, he has a really excellent drop into a zone coverage and gets a pick. And you're like, oh, that looks different. And like you said, I agree. I mean, last year he looked really good. Think about, David Long as a college player, and this is where he fell through the cracks, because he doesn't have the length. He was a pass rusher. David Long as a college player in that defense was a pass rusher. And he was never going to be a pass rusher in the NFL. Again, with at his size, you have to have more length than that. For the most part, he was, he projected as an inside linebacker, but he was a come after the QB guy. And now you're a box linebacker, and you've got to be able to cover. So you got to give him a ton. It's a great find by the Titans. I think it's an example of when John Robinson has drafted well, and that 2019 draft was just fantastic.
It was loaded.
Yeah, they're still living off that draft, even though they haven't drafted well really overall since then. But David Long is a great intangible example of a guy who is able to really totally change his game, overcome some physical limitations, and become, not ready to call him a great player, but I think he's going to be really good for the Titans this year.
There are a lot of players from last year's draft class. We mentioned Rashad Weaver. We mentioned Monty Rice. That the Titans might need to have big year one to year two jumps. We'll discuss that. We'll also break down Philip Forsberg's response. The free agency of Philip Forsberg will be one of the biggest topics of discussion all summer long here in Pro Sports in Nashville. We'll continue this conversation as you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Remember, you can hear us right now, and you can also watch us. We're streaming. You can see me, my hair, my BJ Upton shirt, all day long, all show long at least, on the stream presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook. wherever you watch streaming stuff. You can watch us. YouTube, streaming live right now. Watch us and hear us. I'm Elijah Campbell, filling in for Robbie Stanley this week on Robbie and Rex Road and Joe. We talked about some 2021 Titan draft class players that it's a big year from year one to year two, having to make that jump. We discussed Caleb Farley. What are we going to see from him? I personally don't see maybe any kind of major contribution till November, and maybe early November at the earliest. Rashad Weaver's kind of in a logjam at that position, so maybe seeing significant growth from year one to year two might be difficult to be able to catch on because of that position group. We mentioned Monty Rice, but another one is Dez Fitzpatrick, and I think there's a lot of pressure on him too because the wide receiver depth is a serious concern. And Dez Fitzpatrick, who was a player who got released and then brought back on and was able to contribute a little bit in some spots last season, I feel like is going to be asked to be visible this season for the full season on offense. And then it's not just being visible. You're going to have to be able to pick up slack if, say, Treylon Burks never fully catches on or takes a while to catch on so your offense can be able to keep pace. That's probably the number one 2021 draft pick that I think might have the most pressure to succeed right now.
Well, I mean, the pressure is to make the team. I mean, that's, you know, I don't, and I do think that Dez Fitzpatrick, you got to be careful. You know, you see a couple plays in the spring, and you don't want to jump to any kind of conclusions. I think he's gotten better. He's made some really nice plays out there. This is be an interesting week for him for sure, you know, and obviously camp will be big. I mean, it's a numbers game at that point, at that part of the receiver room. And look, if you are a special teams contributor, then you have an edge. So to me, I think Racy McMath right now looks like a receiver who has a better chance. Dez Fitzpatrick looks like he has a better chance of coming in a pinch and helping this offense than Racy McMath does. But Racy McMath, if he has been a special teams guy, if the Titans consider him a core guy who has real value there, then he has the edge. You know, I would pick him over Dez Fitzpatrick to make this team. I'd kind of be surprised right now if both of them do. And that's not even considering the possibility of the Titans getting a veteran, which I'm still not closing the door on that possibility. But all Dez Fitzpatrick can do is just try to, you know, like what Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is doing is what Dez Fitzpatrick should be doing, like was drafted to be, right? But mm-hmm. But it's hard to get past that guy right now. And we know that Woods and Burks are going to be ahead of him, although, you know, lots of question with Burks, but Burks going to have every opportunity, you know. And again, it's very early. Treylon Burks, you know, the panic button has been prematurely stomped on a few times here. We'll see. It's not all great, that's for sure. But you figure those three guys are ahead, and then it gets interesting. But I'm with him. I mean, Dez Fitzpatrick, if he could emerge and become a guy that they can count on, then that would be a big deal. But I think Kyle Phillips is going to be a real strong contender for not just a roster spot, but I think a role in this offense. So there's four. You know, they keeping six? I don't know. Maybe.
That's tough. I get that was one of the main questions in training camp last year. Like, there's so many good receivers here. You know, you have so many like options to go to. It's going to be hard to leave one out. Now it's kind of just figuring out who's going to be playable. And I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Fitzpatrick to be playable and then to be able to help as well, just because you don't have the top end like you did last year, that top end talent that you did going into last season. Like, there's going to be more asked upon those kind of guys. And if Phillips makes the roster, which I think him and Mason Kinsey are essentially fighting for that slot receiver role. I think they're basically fighting for the same spot. I think one of those two makes it. And I kind of have like lean towards Kyle Phillips. And if Phillips does make the team, like, I'm kind of with you. I think he'll have a decent role in this offense, because this is something that I think they needed last year. They didn't necessarily get a ton of, and the guy they did kind of play in that role, like Westbrook-Ikhina, is going to get a lot of looks as the, what, number three receiver? Maybe number two if Burks doesn't come along?
Yeah, I think to start the season, you probably Wow, it's so hard to know with Burks. Maybe Burks is absolute dynamite from this week on, and it's just like, okay, you got co-number one, Woods and Burks. Sure, it's possible. But at this point, I guess I would look at it like Westbrook, Akina, and Burks as sort of like 2-3 alternating kind of thing. I mean, yeah, I guess you could look at it like Woods, the three of them, 1-2-3. That's your top three. And I hear you on Mason Kinsey. It's possible. Look, I'm keeping an open mind for Mason Kinsey to, you know, surprise me. But yeah, I think Kyle Phillips has the edge there. I do. I think Kyle Phillips has the edge there on him. But we'll see. You know, in that role last year, Chester Rogers played the slot a ton, and he was okay. I mean, he was fine. He was really good in camp. He did fine. Marcus Johnson, yeah, it's so different, the receiver room last year, this year. Marcus Johnson, Josh Reynolds, Julio Jones, A.J. Brown.
I mean, it was a good room last year. It looked great going into the season last year.
Right. It was like, how do they make these decisions? This year, it's like, do they have enough guys they like that it's tough decisions? I mean, I guess you'd probably like it to be a clear five, you know, if you're the Titans. But I think that's going to be kind of the thing between the two second-year guys is Fitzpatrick, probably better option as a receiver. McMath, clearly a better option as a kicking game guy. Is he the level of core special teams guy that, like he just has to make the team? I don't know. But that's his ticket, I think, to it, along with, I mean, he's got to get better at receiver. I've seen more from Fitzpatrick in our glimpses, you know, than from McMath so far.
Especially like in a game setting too. I mean, you've at least seen that in a game setting, Fitzpatrick would give you something. Yeah. You had the preseason game against the Buccaneers where he showed those glimpses a little bit in that setting, and then you also in the regular season when he had to give you a little bit of action, he did play, I thought, relatively well in that Houston Texans game. I believe actually as the game he scored his touchdown in, and like looked fine. It looked like he's actually able to give you something, and wasn't the reason you end up losing that home game to the Houston Texans.
Well, except that one or two of those picks may have been on him, but
may have been, yeah.
Yeah, I think
when there's
one
four of them, it's
was.
Hard. Yeah, when there's four of them, yes. It is kind of hard for to sure. differentiate which one was the worst one. But I think there, like, the need at wide receiver is really where the only reason that becomes to me the guy that I'm looking at the most, just because you got to be able to keep up in the AFC, man. You're playing the AFC West, which is just nothing but great offenses. I have a hard time picking, like, it depends what we see out of Russell Wilson, but I think he'll be fine. So assuming that the current floor of Russell Wilson is still, a net positive and an upgrade over Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater, that the Broncos are going to be really good too. So that's four teams going to be playing this year from one division that is nothing but great offenses. The conference as a whole got a lot better. You're playing the Bengals this year. Like, you're going to have to be able, and I know your defense is great, this is one of the best defenses in the league, but you're going to have to be able to score with them. So the opportunity for Des Fitzpatrick to give them something is not only significant for him, because that's his pathway, his golden ticket to making this team, but the Titans are, I guarantee you, like, fingers crossed, really hoping, Todd Downing really hoping that he can actually use him in more than just a handful of games and that he's playable this year.
Yeah, no question. That would be big. They've got to have, because again, you count on injuries. You expect them. Certainly with this team, you got to expect them after last year. So there's going to be some games, some weeks, some situations where guys who weren't penciled into key positions are in them. So depth is hugely important. And then still just having more versatility too would be a big deal. I mean, I think four guys in particular, you know, Woods, Westbrook, Akina, I think Burks, and then Hooper. I think those four guys are going to have by far the most targets this year. I think those are going to be the four guys Tannehill primarily throws to. But you need a Phillips at times. You're going to need, maybe a Fitzpatrick, a Swaim, maybe an Okonkwo, you know, too, even as a rookie in certain situations. I think he's going to be more of like a situational guy. But still, a guy who, even go back to Jonnu Smith, he didn't really earn that steady every snap kind of role until a little bit of time, but he still was a weapon that they snuck in there early on. I think that's what you see with the Okonkwo too. It all adds up together, but And if any of those four guys go down, that's where you really need that depth to show up.
Exactly. And some good people to ask about this are the Titans coordinators, Todd Downing and Shane Bowen. We'll both be speaking today, starting here in about 4 minutes. We'll carry that live, and you'll hear that next here on Robbie and Rexford, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.